So we've already taken you on a bit of a ride this morning, from the exuberance of our choir's anthem to the sad lament of the words of Jeremiah. Jeremiah is expressing the dark night of the soul in which he and his people found themselves. They were defeated in battle. The Babylonians had ransacked Jerusalem, and so many of their people had been carried off to Babylon as exiles. They had been ripped away from their homes, and home was not the same anymore. It was in ruin. Because my people are crushed, I am crushed. Darkness and despair overwhelm me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why then have my people not been restored to health? If you're wondering what Gilead is, literally, it's the area that's east of the Jordan River, what is now mostly the country of Jordan. And it really, in this case, in the poetry of it, just like Israel is sometimes used, or Judah is used to represent all of the land, it's really a cry out to say, is there no balm anywhere? Is there no medicine? Is there no healing? Is there no restoration or respite? Isn't the Lord in Zion? Again, representing all the land. Is her king no longer there? Has God abandoned us? Like Job, like Jesus, like anyone who ever asks, why has this happened to us? Jeremiah cries out and hears silence. It's time for us to be saved, he says. The harvest is past, the summer has ended, and we're still not saved. Though healing will come, it will be neither quick nor easy. Despite the long wait, through harvest, through summer, things have not gotten better. They've gotten worse. There's no recovery in sight. These words and much of the book of Jeremiah, like the book of Lamentations, are lamentations, lament. They're examples of the ancient tradition of crying out to God and to the world, expressing grief. It's not just whinging, it's not just whining. It's crying out in grief and expressing the pain of the people and the pain of the earth. And maybe we know something about that. We know that here in Richmond, here in BC, we are privileged beyond that of many people who are really living with the impact of climate change, more seriously even. But between the wildfires and the heat waves and the hurricanes, is there anyone that's not feeling nervous about the future? I woke up this morning to hear that there was a very serious typhoon that had moved into the island of Kyushu. Now, you might not know where that is, but that's where I was born. That's my home. the city of Fukuoka. So I'm waiting to hear how some of our dear friends are managing. There's evidence that climate change threatens our mental health. Have you heard the phrase climate anxiety? Have you experienced, are you experiencing climate anxiety? For some of us, it's very serious. For others, it might be a little more in the background, but it's often there. According to recent reports, the studies they've done, the higher temperatures have been leading to more depressive language in people's expressions, higher suicide rates. The fires and the hurricanes and the heat waves carry the risk of trauma and depression on top of the obvious physical damage. Young people today especially report feeling debilitated by climate anxiety and being frustrated by some of us who are older. They try to understand, they say, but they don't really. I'm scared for my future because of the inaction of adults in the past. And we can't blame them, can we? Perhaps we are realizing that the larger forces that have always been beyond our control truly do leave us out of control. And realizing that might well have us feeling helpless, despairing, perhaps hopeless. So how do we deal with climate anxiety? How do we deal with hopelessness and despair for whatever reason you might feel it? Well, first of all, it's important to acknowledge that our feelings and our fears about the climate in this case are certainly justified. Therapists will tell us that anxiety is a rational response to the growing risk of climate change and to other fears we might have. But it doesn't help to hide from it or ignore it. Now, I'm not saying it's not a good idea to limit our news intake so that we're not overwhelmed by it. I know more people are doing that these days, and that's okay. We can hardly hide from it completely. But our emotions are not something to be solved or ignored. Rather than shove the concerns of climate change away, we need to identify them, we need to realize that they're there for a reason, we need to express them. Embracing them makes us stronger. And connection to other people is the key. As the pandemic has made clear, when people don't talk about their anxiety, the resulting isolation can lead to depression. And just like the prophet Isaiah in our reading today, safe but honest expressions of our strong emotions are healthy and important. Gatherings like this, gatherings like those we have throughout the week, both here in the church and in the other parts of our lives, when we gather with friends, people in our community, family, it's so important for us to stay connected with one another and to be able to speak honestly about how we're feeling. There are even organizing informal cafes called climate cafes in places all over the world. They're meant to bring people together to share their feelings and their reactions to the climate crisis. Other groups we probably know combine community with action. That's what Leslie and her class is doing, right? They're together, they're talking about it, and they're acting, they're doing something. It may be simple, but beyond the garbage that they're picking up, they're learning, they're connecting with each other, they're acknowledging how they're feeling. Action ultimately is the antidote to anxiety. The goal is to do something, small or large, that means something to you. And reflect on that internal shift that might happen as you take action. We may feel like we don't have a lot of power to do things at the grand global level, but we can start literally with making changes in our own backyard. We were naming some of them in our theme time. Perhaps you've thought of some others. The CBC right now, CBC Radio and online, is having a wonderful, there's a podcast and series that they're broadcasting called Climate Changers. And they're profiling people throughout the country who are acting in response to the climate crisis. It's inspiring. People are doing things. I read recently about people in a community who are looking for biodiverse alternatives to lawn grass. Apparently, our turf out in front and behind our homes is some of the most wasteful crops in North America. The amount of water it takes, the amount of energy it takes, and there are alternatives. Ground cover, wild grasses that don't require mowing, yay, bonus. Take some effort, but there are alternatives and people are starting to shift. I read about a First Nation on Vancouver Island who are working with a research organization to keep track of how things are changing in the waters that feed them. They depend on the waters for shellfish and other fish to live. And the change in the temperatures of the water and other things is, and the pollution is changing what's available and what's healthy. And they work together with scientists to figure out and to keep track so they can continue to live and adjust, because that's part of what we need to do, is adapt. I think we have some bird watchers in this group, do we? Who's a bird watcher? No, I see some nods. Oh, there we go. This is a really important area for birds. We know that, right? The walkers this last week saw 7 heron along their walk. But bird watchers aren't just there for their own enjoyment. They help count and keep track of patterns and changes. And that helps us know what's happening to the birds, which helps us make changes and adjust to climate change. There are things we can do. And when we start to feel a little less hopeless, we might discover that actually we can have an impact in big ways too. We have a civic election about to happen, electing leaders who are serious about making changes, making hard decisions. That makes a difference. Carrie mentioned electric cars. Maybe you've installed a heat pump or a tankless water heater. They're not perfect solutions. There's no such thing as a perfect solution. It doesn't have to be perfect, but taking steps can make a difference. And we're encouraged to get involved in activism that we can believe in. My daughter's heading back up. She's been up there before. Oh, I'm probably not supposed to talk about it. I just forgot. Oh, well. I won't say exactly where, but she's part of some protests and protecting of wild places in our province. I can't go up there with her, but I support her as much as I can. In Jeremiah's time, it seemed impossible to see how they could come back from the destruction of Jerusalem and the exile of huge portions of their population. But they did rebuild. They did come back. Jeremiah loudly and passionately lamented the suffering of his people, and God joined in the lament. God weeps with us and the earth. And then after we have a good cry, we get back to work. You know, Jerusalem was never the same. Israel was never the same after exile, but they did come back. Fields were planted again. Children played and people sang their songs again. Our earth is groaning under the weight of the climate crisis, but it's also busy adapting and healing itself as well. Did you hear about the salmon runs this year? Places where it's been negligible have started to come back. It's possible. We can partner with God and partner with Mother Earth to stop the destruction and start to reverse it. We are caretakers of creation, and we are not alone. God is with us. The Earth partners with us to heal and restore. Amen. Let's sing together. Touch the earth lightly.